Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today we open our show with some national news headlines from Public News Service on 2024 Talks. Hear about concerns over rising political violence, including threats to Supreme Court justices. The feds have dropped interest rates, and abortion is becoming a hot issue on the campaign trail. Then on Green Scene, hear about San Diego County's new climate action plan and what it means for people across East County. From California News Service, hear about a new high school poll on voting. El Cajon's Police Chief Mike Moulton has retired after a long career, and he's got some advice for his successor. San Diego State University and Sacramento State have some research findings on what makes voters cross parties in local races. The Santana school shooter has been denied parole, and we'll have details on our show today. Our newsmaker interview today is with CAL FIRE Chief Mike Cornett. We'll be talking about the state's new Zone Zero requirements for clearing brush around your home and the outlook for fire season, as well as some tips for keeping your home safe from wildfires. Then on Destination East County, hear about some fall festivities and October events coming up across our region, including Oktoberfests, Hauntfest on Main, street festivals, a haunted circus, and the Pumpkin Express train ride. We'll also be re-airing our bookshelf interview today with Raina Menashe, author of The Spirit of Shy Moon Lake, as Halloween fast approaches. And we'll have some home safety tips today. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I condemn political violence of any type, any time. In fact, our founders really always believed that we should work out our differences at the ballot box peacefully, and that's the American way, and that's the way it should be.
Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, himself a subject of violent threats, is repeating that political violence is wrong, following an Alaska man being charged with threatening six Supreme Court justices. Court filings say Panos Anastasiou made hundreds of often racist or homophobic threats to kidnap, torture, and execute the justices. Louisiana Republican Senator John Kennedy is facing criticism for accusing an Arab American leader for supporting terrorist groups and what he calls their allies during a congressional hearing.
You support can't Hamas. Bring yourself
I do
to
not
say
support Hamas.
You don't
or
support
any...
UNRWA. You don't support Hamas. You don't
I was very clear in my support for UNRWA.
And you don't
I
support
oppose.
Iran. You should hide your head in a bag.
The Federal Reserve announced a long-anticipated shift, cutting interest rates by half a percentage point, the first cut in 4 years. Chair Jerome Powell says inflation has eased and the labor market remains stable, though cooler.
This decision reflects our growing confidence that strength in the labor market can be maintained and inflation moving sustainably down to 2%.
Stocks hit record highs on the news, but Mark Hayes with Americans for Financial Reform warns that a small group in the crypto industry is trying to use campaign donations to shape how that industry is regulated.
There's a small group of wealthy individuals tied to the crypto industry pouring unprecedented amounts of money into campaign spending to dictate policy outcome that will help them to continue to profit.
The controversial lieutenant governor of North Carolina is denying allegations and refusing to end his campaign for governor. A CNN report says in the past, Republican Mark Robinson called himself a black Nazi and defended slavery on a pornographic message board. He was endorsed by former President Donald Trump. Republicans say the scandal could hurt him in the toss-up state. Controversial remarks about Ohio immigrants have drawn attention, but the incumbent in one legislative race says abortion is more important there. Democratic Representative Michelle Grimm serves a suburban Toledo district and describes herself as a women's rights advocate.
It's really important that voters know the intent of the Republicans. If we want to protect the right to reproductive access, we need to make sure that we do protect that.
But her opponent, Republican Wendy Hendricks, disagrees.
The people in Ohio spoke and answered how they want that to move forward. So it's really a non-issue for this campaign.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. San Diego County supervisors have adopted a new climate action plan, a blueprint for reducing greenhouse gas emissions in the unincorporated area and at county facilities to reach net zero emissions by 2045. The document features 70 actions that reduce greenhouse gas emissions. These features also aim to protect the public health and safety, support the environment, and improve the quality of life for residents. The plan, developed after extensive public engagement, also includes performance outcomes that are measurable and environmental justice goals. It aims to improve sustainability and meet the state's greenhouse gas requirements by reducing emissions in the built environment, transportation, energy, solid waste, water, wastewater, agriculture, and conservation. Specifically, the new Climate Action Plan streamlines development, including housing projects, and increases workforce opportunities by shifting to electric-powered buildings. Agriculture operators in the region will benefit from more incentives to increase carbon storage. New infrastructure improvements are planned to roadways, bike lanes, and sidewalks to reduce emissions and improve air quality. A new program to create renewable energy is intended to increase energy reliability and reduce utility bills for the unincorporated area. There are also equity-based outcomes for populations most impacted by climate change, including improvements in community health, increases in workforce, and increased access to services in the unincorporated areas. The 2023 annual report shows that in 2023, the county's climate action efforts reduced the greenhouse gas equivalent of eliminating emissions from over 29 million gallons of gasoline. Permitted residential solar power equivalent to over 17,000 homes, distributed more than 1,000 rain barrels, added 66 new electric vehicles to the county fleet, planted over 5,600 trees by the Department of Parks and Recs, and conserved 448 acres of open space through the Multiple Species Conservation Program.
About 53% of high school students think voting is important, according to a survey out today from the nonprofit Youth Truth, based in San Francisco. Researchers polled 115,000 high school students in California and around the nation on civic engagement and found that 60% believe helping others is important, but only 44% feel confident in their ability to make a difference. Jennifer DeForest with Youth Truth says just 30% of students translate their intentions into meaningful action.
They say, "We don't know where to start." And that's the best case scenario, because for many students, they've actually internalized the message that the system is broken and that what they have to say doesn't matter.
Latinx students report feeling the most disempowered. Only 26% have taken civic action, and 46% believe voting is important. Many students say they're focused on academic success and college acceptance, but they say extracurriculars like scouts, band, and sports do make them feel more civic-minded. Kate Snow is the coordinator of school climate in the Joint Unified School District in Davis, which brought diverse student groups together for a youth empowerment workshop. She says districts need to build young people's confidence in the importance of their voice.
There's a link between how schools are engaging students and helping students see their own power and use their power with how they see and use it in the public arena.
The report encourages schools to promote the importance of voting and getting involved in the community. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
After nearly three decades with the El Cajon Police Department, Chief Michael Moulton has announced his retirement effective December 17th. Chief Moulton's tenure spans over 29 years. He began his career with the department in 1995 and served in every division, from community policing unit to becoming a detective in the gang suppression unit. The city manager appointed him as the city's 15th police chief in September 2019. His first year proved to be challenging times for the city, including the global pandemic and civil unrest in 2020. Reflecting on his career, Chief Moulton shared, "Leading this department through the pandemic and the unprecedented challenges of 2020 was one of my proudest moments. The resilience of our officers and the support from our community helped us emerge stronger, and I'm proud to have been part of that." As police departments across the nation faced attrition, Chief Moulton prioritized recruitment of 110 new officers and implementing resources to help officers manage mental health challenges in a changing environment. He also committed to innovation and new technologies, such as the automated license plate reader program, which recovered over $1 million in stolen vehicles and resulted in 151 arrests in just its first year. Additionally, Chief Moulton expanded the use of drone technology, significantly improving response times and officer safety during critical incidents. He also worked to foster strong community ties, such as through the School Resource Officers Program. El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells praised Chief Moulton's service, saying, "Chief Moulton has led with integrity and compassion. His leadership during challenging times and his commitment to innovation has been invaluable to the safety and well-being of our city. He will be greatly missed." As Chief Moulton prepares to pass the torch, he offers advice to his successor and future police recruits. "Always remember why you're doing this job," he says. "Our core mission is to protect and serve the community, and that should be the guiding principle in every decision. To my successor, never lose sight of the importance of listening to your officers. They are the ones on the front lines every day, and their insights are invaluable. For new recruits," he adds, "understand that this is a noble profession, and while the challenges are many, the rewards far outweigh them. Make moral and ethical decisions, and you will have a long and successful career." The city of El Cajon will soon begin the process of selecting his successor, though those may be big shoes to fill. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Researchers from Sacramento State and San Diego State Universities asked more than 900 partisan voters about housing and homelessness, then asked them to choose, in a hypothetical local election, between a candidate from their party who disagreed with their views or one from an opposite party who is aligned with them on policy. Sacramento State Associate Professor Danielle Martin co-authored the study.
Overall, voters do support candidates from their own party, even when an opposite party candidate was closer to their views. But we also found that about 40% defected from their party. So instead of picking the co-partisan candidate, they picked the candidate that aligned with their preferences on one of those local issues.
I'm Suzanne Potter.
Santana High School shooter Andy Williams will not be getting out on parole anytime soon. At a September 10th hearing, the parole board denied a parole request for Williams, who killed two students and injured 13 people when he opened fire 23 years ago at Santana High School in Santee. State Board of Parole Hearings Commissioner Kevin Chappelle said Williams still poses a threat to public safety. He told Williams, "By your testimony today, it is really unclear if you understand why you committed this horrendous act of violence." Testimony was overwhelmingly against Williams' release. He was sentenced to 50 years to life in prison originally, but sought early release due to new law that requires defendants under age 16 to be tried as juveniles and released by age 25. The same law allows any youths previously convicted as adults to have a parole hearing, though there's no guarantee that parole will be granted. Williams was 15 years old when he took his father's gun to school and changed the lives of countless students, teachers, and families. Among those opposed to his parole was Mike Fowler, superintendent of the Grossmont Union High School District, who said a day rarely goes by that he doesn't meet someone scarred by shootings at Santana and later Granite Hills High School. The superintendent added, "Each time another school shooting captures the nation's attention, wounds are opened again," adding that releasing Williams early would inflict lasting damage on a community which has not fully healed from the original offenses. The mothers of slain students Brian Zucker and Randy Gordon also opposed Williams' parole. Michelle Zucker said Williams took her son's future and should not have a chance at freedom. Gordon's mother, Marie Gordon Rayborn, has said the murder of her son resulted in breakup of her family, caused her to have PTSD, and she's been left homeless, CBS reported. Before Williams fired those fateful shots, he had been bullied at school, suffered divorce of his parents, and a cross-country move with his father. Years later, he revealed he'd been sexually abused by an adult he met during skateboarding, and that adult has since been convicted of child molestation. Williams in prison has expressed remorse, writing letters to families of his victims. He's obtained 2 college degrees and is a counselor working to help other inmates overcome addiction and other issues. But, with dozens telling the court they opposed Williams' release, and only one person, a former student, voicing support for Williams' parole, he will remain behind bars. His next parole hearing is slated for 3 years from now. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today my very special guest is Cal Fire Captain Mike Cornett. And we are going to be talking about fire safety and what you should know to stay safe as fire season approaches. So welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Can you start by telling us what the outlook is for the next couple of months as we're coming into September, October, typically our worst time of year for the big wildfires in San Diego County?
Yeah, I think first we want to start off with the fire season now in this county, especially in this state, is a fire year. We've seen large fires anywhere from January to December in every different part of the state, every different part of the county. So we're kind of getting into that high peak fire conditions this time of year when we experience those large devastating fires fanned by the Santa Ana winds. Last winter, we did have a lot of rain, and we're not currently in a drought, but we still do have a lot of that grass that was grown in this winter and the spring, and now that grass has started to cure, so that the fire is going to be carried by that grass into the heavier fuels. So we're not out of the woods yet. Even though it's cooler out today, we're still expecting large above normal potential for large wildland fires through December.
Yeah, and we're already seeing some large ones. So far, not in San Diego County too much, but we're seeing some really big ones burning up in San Bernardino and Los Angeles and Riverside and Orange counties. A couple of 100,000 acres that have burned up there, you know, just in the last couple of weeks or so. So what should people be doing to prepare?
Well, we want to take advantage of this cooler weather and the higher humidity to maintain our defensible space. That defensible space goes from 0 feet from your house to 100 feet around the structures up to your property line. So we want to make sure that we're thinning the fuels around your house to make it more survivable. We want to do that work in the morning when the temperature is cooler, the humidities are higher, and we have a better chance of not starting a fire while we're doing that work. So we might be doing the right thing the wrong way. So we want to try to use those safeguards with the higher humidity and the right tools to maintain that defensible space.
Yeah. Now, I understand there are some new requirements coming down the road here for fire safety, specifically how far you have to clear around your house. I think everybody knows there's been longstanding rules to clear, you know, up to 100 feet or more if you're in some of the real high fire risk areas. But now there's something new called Zone Zero that can affect up to the first 5 feet around your house. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so Zone Zero has been kind of in effect for a couple years now. It hasn't been enforced on existing construction. It has been enforced on new construction in the state responsibility areas within the zones of high fire danger and very high fire danger. So there's a map that kind of shows that if you have a question of which area you're in, and you can find that on fire.ca.gov.
Right. So it's not everywhere. If you're in a real urban area, this may not apply to you. If you're out in a high fire rural area, it probably does. If you're in between, you probably want to check the map. Yeah. Although it's a good idea, I think, wherever you are, if you can do this. So tell us what it means. Zone Zero is, I understand, the first, 5 feet around your house now?
Yeah, Zone Zero is from 0 to 5 feet from your house. And that's an area that we want to clear of flammable materials. Flammable materials could be like a garbage receptacle, wicker furniture, any firewood, anything that could catch fire and by an ember. We want to keep at least 5 feet away from our house, if not further.
Now, I've read that that may include plants. I mean, if you have plants or shrubs, green plants around your house within those first 5 feet, are you in violation of this?
If the plants are well irrigated and you've maintained those plants so that there's all the dead vegetation or the dead parts of the plant are cut off, we feel comfortable with that. But if you're having dry or dead vegetation up to the house, that's when you would be in violation.
Got it. And I know I've seen the video that Cal Fire put out that shows just how dramatically effective this is. Folks out there, it showed, you know, two structures. One of them had a wood fence right up to the house and, you know, landscaping and so forth. The other one had a metal fence and hardscaping. And, you know, when the match was lit, you know, one of those just went up in flames in moments, really, and the other one didn't burn. So it certainly showed how important this can be, even though it can be maybe a hassle or costly sometimes to do those things.
Yeah, and we're finding that the houses normally don't burn down with the flame front that comes through. It's these embers that come through, and the embers can travel miles ahead of the fire. So we want to make sure that we're maintaining that space, because that's going to it's going to protect the house. But if you need to use the house as a temporary refuge, that's going to give you that upper hand and be able to survive in your house a lot longer than you would if you had all that flammable material within that 5 feet.
Yeah, you mentioned the embers. I want to talk about the other zones going out past 5 feet. But first, can you mention these ember resistant roof vents and how important those are now?
Yeah, all of our gable vents and soffit vents, they're important to keep ventilation in our attic, but that's also a prime location for embers to enter that area, that space in there between your roof and your ceiling. And once the fire gets established in that attic, it's very hard to extinguish. So we want to make sure that we have the either netting or a metal netting or the fire safe, the gable vents that are able to extinguish those embers before they get in. We want to make sure that if you're using that wire mesh, that it's at least a quarter inch, if not an eighth inch wide opening on those.
Got it. Now, as we go out to the other zones, can you walk us out past zone zero, the first 5 feet from a structure? What do people need to know about what they should do in the additional zones around their house?
Yeah, so there's three zones. Zone zero, 0 to 5 feet from your house. Zone one is 5 feet to 50 feet from your house. And that's an area where we want to keep it lean. We want to clean within that 50 feet. We want to remove all dead plants, remove any dead or dying leaves, and trim your trees up off the ground. Make sure that they have that vertical spacing and that horizontal spacing. So if fire were to come into your yard, that the fire wouldn't be carried from shrub to shrub or from tree to tree, up into closer to your home. And then zone two is 50 to 100 feet. We want to make sure that we cut down any grass to a maximum of 4 inches. We want to keep that horizontal space between the bushes. We want to make sure that those bushes aren't close to trees, because that bush could create what we call a ladder fuel. And as the ground fire comes up, it could catch that bush on fire and it would be closer to the tree, and it would climb that tree essentially like a ladder. And then we're getting a lot more embers once that fire gets into the tree. So those are the three zones, and we want to go out to 100 feet or to the property line. There's currently no way for us to enforce that 100 feet on an adjacent property. But if you do have that situation, maybe you can reach out to your neighbor and create that relationship to maybe get the 100 feet around your home.
Yeah. I understand they've now got something called fire. I believe, is it fire safe communities? Is that the term, something that people can sign up for, get their neighbors involved in, which can actually help reduce your fire insurance rates or make it easier to get fire insurance, which is such a big problem for people these days? Can we touch on that a bit?
Yeah, we have a few FireWise communities in this county. They're normally through our community risk reduction of County Fire and the Fire Safe Council work together with the Office of State Fire Marshal to meet those requirements to become a FireWise community. And there are some additional benefits with insurance in that.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I understand it doesn't even have to be everybody in the community. People have said, you know, what if my neighbor won't do it? But if, I guess if you get that critical mass of, you know, enough people will, and it doesn't have to be an entire zip code or an entire city, it can be a portion of it, a neighborhood, then you can get some savings on your insurance rates to help keep everybody safer.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing is to get involved with those fire safe councils, engage with your neighbors. And it's a community effort because we want to make sure that everybody's staying safe. We want to make sure that we're checking in on those neighbors, making sure that everybody's kind of on the same page to maintain our fire safety.
Absolutely. So where can people get more information about the new zone requirements and also about the FireWise communities?
So for the zone requirements, we can go to fire.ca.gov/dspace. That's D as in Delta space. And that will give you a checklist to assess your home in your property. It'll give you information on evacuation planning and how to set up a wildfire action plan. And that will assist you in planning on what projects you want to tackle first.
But if you could send me the links for all of these, then what we can do, folks, is we can put them up on our website at eastcountymagazine.org. Just look for our interview with Captain Mike Cornett on there, and you'll be able to find links to the FireWise community information, as well as Zone Zero and lots of other good fire safety information for you. And I also encourage everybody to follow the CAL FIRE alerts that are really helpful. They're out there on X, which used to be Twitter. Any other resources like that for people to stay abreast when fires happen that you'd like to refer folks to?
Yeah, so on social media, we suggest that you follow CAL FIRE San Diego on X and Facebook. Mm-hmm. You can follow at SD Sheriff on X. Mm-hmm. Another good one is at Alert San Diego Co. So that's Alert San Diego Co. on X. And that's the Office of Emergency Services. We suggest that you download the SD Emergency app. That will give you resources and information, and as well as the Genesis Protect app. That's going to give you real-time information and an interactive map to see the evacuations. Mm-hmm. And then finally, we want you to visit fire.ca.gov, and that will give you all the incident fact sheets and incident information for the entire state of California. And it'll provide resources such as 3D maps, a situation summary, and to see how many firefighters are out there on the line.
Yeah, that's great. We're following, I think, all of those for our East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts, which is another service that's free that people can sign up for. We send them via email and we tweet them on I don't have to call it tweets anymore, but on X, that used to be Twitter. And I always tell people there's no such thing as signing up for too many emergency alert services, but it's really important to stay safe and stay informed when fires happen. And when you're asked to evacuate, to do so, right?
Yeah, when it comes time to evacuate, we don't take that decision lightly. It's a joint decision between fire and law enforcement. The sheriff's officer deputy is right next to us. And when we make those decisions to evacuate, we don't do so lightly because we want to protect life and property. And then as soon as we make those decisions to evacuate, we start with a repopulation plan because we want to keep the residents out until it's safe to bring them back. And we want to do that sooner than later.
Super. Well, I really want to thank you for joining us today. Is there anything else, Captain Cornett, that you would like our audience to know that I haven't specifically asked you about today?
I would say that these fires to our north are a good wake-up call for us to make sure that we have those evacuation plans in order, to make sure that that go bag is stocked and it's next to your door. And if you have to evacuate, you might only have minutes and you might only have seconds. So mm-hmm. having everything in place beforehand is going to make you a lot more efficient and safer in that evacuation process.
Yeah, and that should certainly include things like, you know, vital medications, water, food for your any pets that you have with you, infant formula if you have babies, you know, vital papers that you couldn't live without, like your insurance information and so forth. And what else? What else do you recommend people put in a blanket, flashlight?
Prescription medicines, pets, people, plastic. So you have your cards or some cash, mm-hmm. and anything that's irreplaceable, like you said, the documents and and food and water to sustain you for at least 72 hours.
Yeah, car charger for your phone is another good one. Folks, if you tuned in late, we have been speaking with Captain Mike Cornett with CAL FIRE. And I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
This is John Tidwell with this week's Destination East County. There are some awesome autumn events coming up across East County in late September and October, including the new Taste of the College area, Oktoberfests in La Mesa and in El Cajon, Haunt Fest on Main and a Haunted Circus in El Cajon, Rolling Pumpkins at Parkway Plaza, and Pumpkin Express train rides in Campo. Here are the fun and festive details. The College Area Business District announces the inaugural Taste of College Area on Sunday, September 29th, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. This unique event invites foodies to embark on a culinary journey that offers a fresh perspective of the College Area neighborhoods. With over 20 local establishments participating, this event promises a rich tapestry of flavors, showcasing the neighborhood's up-and-coming culinary scene. Ticket holders will enjoy a self-guided tour of the area's best eateries, coffee houses, pubs, and wine bars. For tickets and details, visit tasteofcollegearea.com. The German American Societies of San Diego invites you to two full weekends of authentic German celebrations with Oktoberfest in El Cajon, the last weekend in September, and again the first weekend in October on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. The festivities take place at the German America Society's El Cajon headquarters at 1017 South Mollison. Enjoy German food such as bratwurst, ox on the spit, potato pancakes, sauerkraut, red cabbage, potato salad, salted pretzels, and a variety of European pastries, plus German beers and more. Enjoy traditional folk dancing and live music, which includes a band flown in from Germany. There are also drama routines, stein-holding competitions, a kids' zone, games, contests, and prizes. For full details, visit GermanClubSanDiego.org. La Mesa hosts its Oktoberfest, October 4th through 6th. This beloved Bavarian-style festival, drawing revelers for 3 days of vibrant live music, authentic German cuisine, German and craft beers, capturing the spirit of Munich. The celebration includes 3 beer gardens with live entertainment, plus an artisan market and food fair, German Kinder Carnival with rides, Glücklich games, Dachshund races, and a pop-up pumpkin patch. For more information, visit lamesaoktoberfest.org. Haunt Fest on Main is a family-friendly Halloween-themed event held on Main Street in downtown El Cajon on October 18th. This free event features live music, costume contests, carnival rides, a haunted car show, and a variety of local vendors offering food, crafts, and games. There's also a scary petting zoo, a candy trail, rock climbing wall, face painting, airbrush tattoos, and stilt walkers. In addition, the Magnolia Performing Arts Center hosts a haunted circus during Haunt Fest, feature a superhero and villains Halloween-themed circus show by Twisted Orbit Circus Entertainment. Acts include jugglers, contortionists, acrobats, hoop throwers, stilt walkers, crystal balls, and more. For more information, Google hauntfest.org. Rolling Pumpkins are back at Parkway Plaza Shopping Mall in El Cajon, bringing fall fun now through November 1st in the parking lot on the southwest side of the mall. You can bring the whole family out to enjoy a wide range of fall festivities, including rides, games, giant inflatables, a petting zoo, pony rides, and, of course, plenty of pumpkins. Rolling Pumpkins will be open Monday through Friday from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. You're invited to join the Pumpkin Express Halloween celebration each Saturday and Sunday in October at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo. You can ride decorated vintage rail cars through the San Diego County backcountry as fall descends through some of the most scenic parts of the historic San Diego and Arizona Railway. After the train returns to the museum grounds, passengers head to the display building where children and their parents enjoy decorating pumpkins from an outdoor pumpkin patch and viewing a collection of Halloween scenes and haunted train cars. For a new adults-only spooktacular experience, check out the Sip and Scare Sunset Special, Saturdays in October at 6:30 p.m. For tickets and details, visit Pacific Southwest Railway Museum's website at psrm.org/pumpkin. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery, host of the East County Magazine radio show. With Halloween fast approaching, we thought this would be a great time to replay our interview from a couple of years ago with our own Raina Menasche, host of our bookshelf segment on her latest book, The Spirit of Shy Moon Lake.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menasche, and I'll be your host for this segment.
This is Miriam Raftery, host of the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today I'm also guest hosting Bookshelf because my guest today is Raina Menasche, our host of Bookshelf. Raina's fiction has been honored by organizations such as the San Diego Writers and Editors Guild, San Diego Book and Writing Awards, and the Southern California Writers Conference. Her first novel, Twice Begun, and her second novel, Silent Bird, were both finalists in the 2012 and 2013 San Diego Book Awards. And her newest novel, a paranormal suspense titled The Spirit of Shy Moon Lake, was released in spring 2021. Her first children's book, The House That Sneezed, will be released early next year. She is currently writing Thrice Begun, the sequel and prequel to Twice Begun. Her website, RainaMenasche.com, includes blogs on psychology and wellness, writing, and other social commentary. Also a licensed clinical social worker, Raina Menasche has taught psychology and counseling at Southern California universities, as well as therapeutic techniques to human service professionals. In addition, she's a workshop leader at the Southern California Writers Conference in San Diego and Irvine. She created a class called Character Therapy, and you're the shrink. I love that. And it's alive to emphasize the joyful creativity of exploring therapeutic exercises with a fictional character. Raina has served as vice president of the Kronos Theater Group, and she often uses dramatic as well as therapeutic techniques in her creative work. And of course, as host of our bookshelf right here on East County Magazine's radio show in San Diego, Raina interviews local authors and sometimes national ones about their creative processes. And you can find more about her at her website, RainaMenasche.com. And that's spelled RainaMenasche.com. Raina, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. It's so much fun to be on my own show.
Yeah, it's different, isn't it, being the interviewee instead of the interviewer.
It feels a little strange.
Yeah. I've got to ask, switching from prior genres, and you're really noted for crossing genres in your books that really defy definition. How difficult was it to switch from psychological romance novels that dealt with some heavy subjects such as addiction and recovering from different traumas into writing paranormal suspense?
Well, in some ways, I see it as consistent because in a way, the suspense book really has a lot to do with trauma. And the stories that we tell to comfort ourselves, to soothe ourselves after a trauma, the different paths we choose or don't choose, how we heal or don't heal. I'm always doing this psychological thing, but I put it in a different kind of story. I think I've always wanted to write something scary, scary in the more paranormal sense, and I've been hinting in that direction, and so I decided to just kind of plunge in and do it, and it was very different writing this book.
Well, I've read Spirit of Shy Moon Lake. I enjoyed it, even though it did keep me up all night. It is a page.
Oh, yay.
So you did your job. Yeah. Where did you dream up your ideas for this creative book, Raina, in which people are drawn to this beautiful but perilous Shy Moon Lake and the secrets from the past that it holds?
Well, and it started with an idea. What if you were in a place where your karma, so to speak, what you sow, you know, what you reap, you sow, comes back at you really quickly, where you get what you deserve or you don't get what you don't deserve, or at least people think that's what happens. And then I sort of, you know, it just meanders off. I mean, this book took about a decade to write. And in that process, it changed quite a bit, but it had a lot to do with what people believe again, what they tell themselves, how we often don't know what's true, what's not true.
Interesting. What was the inspiration for your main character, Jess McCourtney, and for that matter, any of the other key characters that are so compelling in this book, Raina?
Well, you know, sometimes people have always asked me that, especially, well, in my former books as well. And sometimes they think it's me because I often write in the first person.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're all like bits and pieces of me. It's like one big salad or a collage. I think Jess has parts of me for sure. Raising a small boy, the pains, traumas, and incredible joys of motherhood are in there. What it's like to experience betrayal is in there. You know, these are things that everyone experiences, or not everyone, but many people experience. The main character, Charlie McCourtney, her husband, he's a poet. And I think I explored a lot about artists there. Again, what they tell themselves, the stories they tell themselves, how they comfort themselves, how they cope with life's dilemmas and mistakes. Now, the other sort of the residents of the town, I really just had plain romping fun with that. I wanted to make them superstitious, but I wanted to create superstitions and beliefs that don't currently exist. I didn't want to trot on anyone's beliefs or, you know, traditions. I just sort of made up my own. So the whole thing is imagination from beginning to end. But again, why do people believe what they believe?
Who knows? Yeah, fascinating psychological angles in this. So you actually finished writing and marketing the book in the middle of a global pandemic and lockdown. How challenging was that? Or maybe it was the opposite. Maybe you found you had a lot of time on your hands all of a sudden.
Well, I had already written it and I had done most of the editing, final editing, for a long time, actually. And what the pandemic did is when it started, it just kind of took the oomph out of me. Mm-hmm. I had two book launches, two or three that I canceled because I didn't want to do them virtually. Virtual launchings are fine. It's just that I wanted to read this aloud, you know, live.
So you were saying it just sort of took the oomph out of things. In what ways?
I had all this excited preparation that I had to change. So there were live book launches that I had to cancel. And also, I have to say, I got a little depressed, like lots of people, you know, with the shutdown.
Sure.
And I guess it took a lot of, it took me longer. It took me longer. I just kind of sat on it for several months. So and then it inspired, of course, other books because you're thinking pandemic themes.
Oh my gosh. Now talk about finding the silver lining there.
Right? Yeah. Not that anyone wants to hear about a pandemic right now.
Did you try any virtual events?
I did. I've gotten used to it. I think we go kicking and screaming into things that we're not used to. I'm a clinician, as you know, in my day job, and I do those meetings virtually.
As we're doing this interview via Zoom right now.
Exactly. So I think now I would do a virtual book launch, but at the time I was still, you know, I wanted to do things live. Yeah. So it was disappointing in that way, but you do end up saving some money during a pandemic if you're still employed. And so use some of those things to revamp my website. You know, as I said, make lemons out of lemonade if you can.
There you go. Raina, can you read an excerpt for us from The Spirit of Shy Moon Lake?
Sure, I would love to. I'm going to take an excerpt that's fairly early on. It's page 23 in the book, and I'll begin where the little boy Jonah, they just moved to Shy Moon Lake, the family, that's Jess, her husband Charlie, and Jonah. And the little boy Jonah was climbing on the balcony right away the second they got to their new house and almost fell and hurt himself. And so the mother is shaken up. This is the scene right afterwards. Mommy, are you mad at me? No, you just scared me, honey. I'm fine now. Sorry I raised my voice. He thought about that and smiled. Yeah, he would forgive me. Big of him. Then he stood on his tippy toes, peering towards the lake. Who's that? Who's who? He pointed. There, in the water. I squinted at the inky blackness, recalling the town legend about long ago lovers drowning. Sorry, honey, it's too dark. You're just seeing tree shadows. There were indeed tree shadows, thrown by starlight, shifting across the dark water like a flutter of insects. Silhouettes of trees appeared suspended between opposing diadems of light. The Milky Way above and its reflection on the waters of Shy Moon Lake below. How thrilling, I thought, to view a night sky containing more than six or seven stars. Against this luminous, scintillating dome, anything seemed possible. Like, I wondered, what would happen to all this beauty if there was an earthquake? Violent quakes had no doubt accompanied the birth of the volcano that now cupped the lake. How many points on the Richter scale could these cottages endure before windows shattered, porches toppled, the land crumbling beneath our feet? Maybe we will need to climb inside that refrigerator. Mrs. Paddock said, Mrs. McCourtney, are you all right? I shook off the unwanted gloom. I might not be as congenitally cheerful as my husband, but I was not usually like this either. Yes, thank you. I'm fine. I'm just tired. It's been a long day. As Charlie rose back up the steps, the upper half of his body hidden behind boxes and bags, a door slammed. A porch light flicked on in the cottage next door. We looked over. A woman with short, darkish hair gazed back at us, her expression flash frozen. Good evening, I called, waving, happy for the distraction. We're moving in. She did not reply, just stared. She had to have heard me. The cottages were not that far apart. I stepped to the end of the porch. My name is Jess. This is my husband, Charlie, and our son, Jonah. We've bought this place and we're moving in right now. Still no response from the lady next door. Was she ill? Disabled? Finally, as if set to a delayed timer, her eyebrows went down and a smile opened up nice and big. Well, hello. Welcome.
What a marvelous and somewhat chilling piece of foreshadowing that is.
Thank you.
Love it. I've got to ask you about your class, Character Therapy and You're the Shrink, emphasizing as we've noted, the joyful creativity of exploring therapeutic exercises with a fictional character. Can you tell us a little bit more about that for people who may be interested?
Yes, this class is really, it's really personal. It's like an art project for me. When I was little, I couldn't decide between being a writer and being, say, a psychologist. So basically, I kept going back and forth between the two of them. This class is really putting it all together. I take all these psychological theories that I learned in my master's degree in my profession and look at a character from all these theories, the child development theories, where did your character get stuck in developmental tasks that causes current behavior, or looking at defense mechanisms and thought distortions, and sort of really looking into these explanations that we've developed to understand your character better if you choose to. Now, do I do that with my characters? I think I do it more on on an informal level, but I also hand out to the people who attend the class, I hand out lots of worksheets so that they can revisit these theories and play with them. Play with your characters. Have fun. This is the sandbox.
Very wise advice. The characters are really what drives a novel, I think, even more than plot. So that begs the question of what are you working on next?
Well, Twice Begun, which was my first novel, has to do about with sort of reinventing yourself after, you know, a huge betrayal, and how sometimes the people that we think are better people don't turn out to be as good as people who have been through very hard times and have risen above.
Yeah.
There is a house in that book, it's her great aunt's house in Coronado, that was a home for hysterical women during World War II. And a lot of readers said, man, I wanted to learn more about that house. And when are you going to write the sequel to the book? I want to know what happens to this former social worker who gets involved with a person who's a recovering addict or former client, which is taboo. Anyway, so yeah. I decided to write the this sequel and prequel. Uh-huh. So it goes into the great aunt's youth in this house, as well as, so that's called Thrice Begun. I'm about, you know, halfway, maybe three quarters of the way through that. And then there's a children's story called The House That Sneezed that is really four drawings. I'm not doing the drawings, but it's very near completion. So that one also has psychological themes, basically to help little kids deal with grief by using a metaphor of the house that's not feeling well.
And very timely right now with a pandemic that's killed 700,000 Americans as we speak.
If I could say that that book was inspired by when I worked with little kids and families, and I was looking for that book to use with the children that I worked with, and I couldn't find it. So I finally said, okay, well, let's create it.
So it's really filling an important need. Well, Raina, you're just so versatile, and I want to thank you today. We are out of time, but I want to thank you for coming on the show today and sharing all of your marvelous literary knowledge with us. Readers, you can find more about Raina Menashe and her books at rainamenashe.com, and that's spelled RainaMenashe.com.
It was a pleasure, Miriam. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. You've been listening to the Bookshelf segment on East County Magazine's radio show on KNSJ, bringing you news about local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Ed Barena for East County Magazine and KNSJ with some important safety tips. On average, 20,000 deaths and 21 million medical visits occur annually, Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna reminds us. Firefighters and paramedics respond to thousands of accidents every day, he says. Chief DiGiovanna, author of the Chief's Corner column on East County Magazine, offers these tips to help prevent accidents in your home. In the bathroom, cleaners should be locked away, out of the reach of children. Medications, scissors, razor blades, and cleaning supplies should be kept in a locked cabinet or out of the reach of children and pets. Non-skid stickers in the tub and shower can prevent slips and falls. Children should not be left unattended in or around the pool. Pool areas should be fenced in with a gate secured with a child-proof safety lock or latch. Electrical safety. Children can stick objects in open sockets and get hurt. Unused electrical outlets must have safety plugs to prevent accidental electrocution from foreign objects being put in the socket. Every home should have a fire extinguisher. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors should be on each floor of the home and tested monthly. Batteries should be changed at least every 6 months or as necessary. A working fire extinguisher must be accessible. Keep paper towels, plastic plates, plastic utensils, and anything other than cooking equipment away from the stove. These items can easily start a fire if left too close to the range. Keep pesticides and cleaners away from children. Store chemicals in a locked cabinet or keep on a high shelf that children cannot reach. Do not spray bug spray or pesticides near a child's toys, since toys tend to go into a child's mouth. In addition, never leave household chemicals unattended. Unfortunately, small children may try to open the products and drink the contents.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
Hundreds of thousands of older Californians will see huge savings on prescription drugs starting in January, according to a new report from AARP. The Biden administration's Inflation Reduction Act caps prescription drug costs at $2,000 per year for people on Medicare, starting in 2025. Nina Weiler-Harwell with AARP says an estimated 271,000 people in the Golden State will hit the out-of-pocket maximum next year.
Medicare drug plan enrollees nationwide who reach the new out-of-pocket cap will see an average savings of roughly $1,500 or 56% in 2025 for new prescription drugs.
On average, 40% of people on Medicare who reach the cap will save at least $1,000 a year, and 12% will see savings of more than $3,000. Every year from 2025 to 2029, between 3 and 4 million Part D plan enrollees are estimated to benefit from the new out-of-pocket cap. Weiler-Harwell says the Inflation Reduction Act introduced a number of new policies to cut costs for Americans on Medicare.
Copays for insulin capped at $35 a month. Vaccines such as shingles and pneumonia are free. The Inflation Reduction Act did allow Medicare to negotiate the price of high-cost prescription drugs, so we won't really start to do that until 2026.
Also, thanks to the IRA, drug companies will have to pay a penalty if they raise their prices higher than inflation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, A.K. Jewell, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617. Or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.